This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Thank you again for attending the Anchorage Parks Commission meeting. Welcome to those that are on Zoom as well as listening on the radio. We're going to start where we left off yesterday with our proposals. Again, we're going to shuffle up the agenda just a little bit. Staff had a great recommendation in providing the elk population update first prior to going into the elk season changes. So I think that's a better presentation. That was a great idea. So we're going to have them go over the population prior to us getting them to the license allocation. So with that, I guess Andy's going to come up. Andy and Andrew. All right. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, Andy Lindland here, and Andrew Norton, for Simmons Big Game Biologist, for statewide biologist, and we have locations down in Rapid City. Today, we're happy to be here to provide some updates on research and management of elk in the state of South Dakota. So some of the things we want to cover today, of course, we're going to start off with our elk action plan. We're going to do that because a lot of the information you have, our recommendations to proposal in front of you, are really based and guided by many of the objectives and strategies in the plan that you, the Commission, just adopted here in the summer of 2021. And of course, we're going to talk about some of our survey data, talk about harvest, some of our biological data that we get from food composition surveys, survival monitoring, aerial surveys. And we're going to wrap that up with some population modeling and some license allocation that we need to do in order to meet our population objectives. So with that said, I'm going to dive right into our elk action plan. Just going to highlight a few of the most pertinent parts of that elk action plan that apply to the recommendations that you have in front of you today. Of course, we have our population objectives, as you recall, for the Black Hills. Our objective is 6,000 to 8,000 elk. For Custer State Park, it's 500 to 600. We also have a strategy or an objective in the plan that guides us as an agency on license allocation. So for our any elk licenses, 25% of those licenses go to archery season and 75% go to firearm season. For antlers elk licenses, 10% go to archery, 90% firearms for the Black Hills, and then for Custer State Park, 100% of those go to the firearm season. We also have an objective for the age of our harvested bulls. And what we're managing for in both the Black Hills and Custer State Park is an average bull harvest age structure of 60% of our bulls that are 4 years of age or older. Last but not least, we have an objective for hunter success. We're managing for a minimum of 75% hunter success for those hunters that have an annual license. So jumping into our harvest data, we do hunter surveys. We survey 100% of our elk hunters. Most of that's via electronic email surveys. We also have a mandatory check. And so if you harvest an elk in the state of South Dakota, you have 24 hours to check that in your game fishing park. And we also have some check stations in the Black Hills, about 11 of them scattered throughout the Black Hills. Of course, we get some harvest information from this process. One of the important parts of the data that we get is harvest age in that when a hunter checks in his elk. And we get that by collecting the two front incisor teeth on an elk. We send that out to an outside source in Montana, Matthews Laboratory, where they age the harvested elk using some intermanualized techniques. Basically, they're slicing that incisor up, and they're counting rings, kind of similar like you do to a tree. So looking at harvest data, here's a figure showing total harvest, the green bars, and then harvest for basically bulls and cows and the blue and red lines, respectively. You can see from about 1990, our elk population really started growing all the way to the mid-2000s. We had a lot of elk on the landscape. We also had multiple years of substantial drought. So our elk population was well above social tolerance. We really ramped up that harvest, as you can see. The red line there, actually one year in 2005, we harvested almost 1,000 cows. We really put the pressure on the elk. We really wanted to drop that elk population down, and we did. And ever since then, the elk population has been growing. We've had some ups and downs, but nothing in comparison to what we saw before. And I think you can attribute a lot of that to some of the biological data that we have now. We have a lot better data sets to try and manage our elk population towards the predetermined objective, and a lot of that, of course, we're going to talk about today. So just looking at 2021 harvest, last year we harvested about 735 total elk, of which about 471 were males and 264 were females. You can see looking those last 2 years, 2020 and 2021, looking at that red line, which is our cow harvest. We've been pretty conservative on harvest in the hills. You can see our recommendation in front of you today. We are recommending that we increase some of that harvest. We're looking now at our harvest age. So this is a graph showing the proportion of bulls in the harvest that are 4 years of age or older. And again, this is to evaluate our objectives that we want about 60% of our harvest to be in that category. So here we're looking at Custer State Park in blue and the Black Hills in red. And you can see that objective at 60%. We've been well above that objective we've identified in the action plan for several years now. Last year, 2021, we are about 80% of our Black Hills harvest is in that category of 4 years of age or older, and 100% of the bulls at Custer State Park there. So as you can see, we have some room where we should harvest some more bulls in order to manage for the objective we've identified and provide some more hunting opportunity out there. And again, you're going to see that reflected in the recommendations in front of you. Our hunter success, evaluating that objective is a similar story. And you can see here, looking back all the way to 2015, we have hunter success rates for those hunters that had an in-the-elk license for all the units you can see there at different rows. But just looking at Black Hills total and Custer State Park, you can see the last couple of years we've been well above that minimum 75% hunter success threshold. So again, this does provide us some opportunities to issue some more licenses and provide hunting opportunities. Now moving on to our herd composition surveys. These are random ground counts we do them in August, and this is how we get an estimate of age ratios. This is cows to hunter cows, and also sex ratios. This is bulls to cows. And for today, it's an interesting time. We're just going to look at age ratios. So this is how we estimate recruitment into the population in fall recruitment. You can see here the green bars, that's calves per 100 cows. That's how we quantify recruitment. You can see that over the years. Those little bars that are above the green bars, that's our estimate of precision. But just focusing on the green bars the last couple of years, 2020 and 2021, we've been at about 46 calves per 100 cows, so very similar to our long-term average of 47. Now looking at survival monitoring, some of you may know back in 2015, we as an agency began a concerted effort to capture and radio collar a really good sample of cow elk in the Black Hills in order to monitor survival. We started off with a sample size of about 100 as our goal. We maintained that all the way through about 2020. That was the last year we captured cow elk. We actually put GPS collars on in 2020, so we are obtaining some additional data in addition to survival. And right now, we're sitting at about 25 GPS collared elk and 40 VHF collars. Of course, like I mentioned, we do this to monitor cow survival, which is really an important part of our population models and estimating trends in abundance. But also is really a great way to actually quantify the impacts of cow harvest on our health population in the Black Hills. Mm-hmm. Last year, we were looking at an annual cow survival really good at about 93%. do want to mention and acknowledge Rocky Mountain Health Foundation. It's been a great conservation partner in this effort. They funded the vast majority of our captures, so it's pretty expensive work, and the vast majority of our Apollo purchases. So hats off to those folks. They really helped us as an agency obtain some really important biological data. Just a glimpse of some of the GPS information that we're gathering actually as we sit here today. We haven't started any formal analyses, and this is just kind of a snippet of some of the data, if you will, but just wanted to point out some of the new things that we're starting to see with these GPS collars. You can see here, I don't know if you can see my mouse or not, but this area down here is the Jasper fire burn area. You see a lot of the red dots are really captured in the wintertime, and all the squiggly lines are individual cow movements. You can see there's quite a bit of migration in and out of that Jasper fire area, which we've seen in past research, all the way up in the Northern Minnesota, Unit 1, and even in the Wyoming some. But what's probably more interesting to me, because we haven't really captured a lot of these animals in other places in the hills, are these ones up in Northern Unit 2. It's really been homebodies. They haven't made any migrations. They're really stay localized. And the same with these ones down here on Elk Mountain. They really stayed down on that mountain range and haven't been migrating yet. So a lot of interesting things that we're starting to learn, and we're going to continue to learn. The last thing I wanted to talk about are our aerial surveys. As some of you may recall, we conduct aerial surveys periodically in the Black Hills. We survey 100% of the Black Hills, which is pretty unique as a wildlife agency. We don't sample. We survey every part of the Black Hills with helicopters. We started this effort in 2013, completed in 2016 and 2020, and we're scheduled right now to do it again in 2024. Aerial survey, of course, provides us a really good estimate of abundance of winter in elk in the Black Hills, and this is a refresher. Last time we did this in 2020, our estimate was about 6,500 elk in the Black Hills. In addition, we had about 460 in Custer State Park. So putting this all together, I briefly went over some of our survey data. We also have research data that we utilize in managing elk. We put that all together in population models, and this provides us with a way to estimate abundance and growth rates and decide where the elk population is going. This, of course, helps us in making recommendations on license allocations in order to meet our population objectives. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Andrew, and he's going to talk about some of these things that we do to model populations and meet objectives.
Any questions from the commissioner and presented to the Black? Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Robley. I'm Andrew Norton, Senior Big Game Biologist. As Andy said, I'll talk about the information he just presented and tying that all together, specifically and how we use it for population modeling and how that performs the population characters. So just to start, Andy focused a lot on the Black Hills. I'll just zoom out quick to the entire western part of the state here and go over our general objectives. It's different for the Black Hills than they are for areas on the prairie. That's because we have that good information on the Black Hills, such as that helicopter survey Andy talked about. So on the prairie, we specify these objectives, but we really don't have any quantitative way of measuring whether we're achieving those objectives. It's just basically the direction we want to go. For example, in Harding County, we want to maintain that population. In this West River area unit, it's kind of a catch-all unit. You know, elk are moving in and out. We don't have an objective specified there, but we do want to provide some hunting opportunities. So for most of the talk here today, I will focus on folks where those objectives change. They specifically relate to population growth rates, and we're able to do that again because of those helicopter surveys and some of the other research that we have, such as survival monitoring and herd composition surveys. So, for example, in unit H1A in the northwestern part of the Black Hills, you can see that light blue. The objective there is what we project the population to do, which is a slight increase based on the license recommendations we see today. Across most of the state and across most of the Black Hills as well, we're in a pretty good spot. As you can see, a lot of the map is green, which means we don't expect that population to change much more than 2% one way or another each year, with the exception of two units on the eastern side of the hill, Unit 5A, mostly public. We want to grow the population substantially there, and we'll see the license recommendations reflect that.
as do they in 89 that are really likely to potentially decrease the population of a lot of private land there. One thing to note is sometimes this isn't a perfect system because we have the population objective of 6,000 to 8,000 for the entire Black Hills, but then within the Black Hills, by unit, we have different objectives. So we need to make those match and fall within this overall population objective. So for example, we probably want more elk right now in unit H2, and maybe a little bit fewer elk in H3, but for reasons of exceeding maximum tolerance of licenses in H3, you might not want to give out more licenses there because you're outside of land. So then basically we have to manage for a little bit fewer elk in H3. So off to the right here, I've shown all the population estimates from the aerial survey in red with the arrow bars around them. And then between that, we use that biological information that essentially connects the dots. So from 2013 to 2016, we've basically got a very good idea of what the population is. We can determine what survival should be outside of harvest. We have the harvest, we have the herd recruitment data, and we can connect those dots. And then determine basically what it should be on average going forward. So from 2020, moving forward, we apply those average survival rates. You get an idea of where we're at. And as you can see, we've grown a little bit in the last 2 years by design. We're at 6,500 in 2020. And right now we're right at about 7,000, right in the middle of our population objective. So zooming in here to the last 4 years, as I said, we've grown 8% in the last 2 years. We want to kind of slow that growth rate down a little bit because we don't want to get to the upper end of the population objective. So in order to slow the growth rate down, we need to give out more animal licenses and reduce that, not to a decreasing population, but instead of an 8% growth over 2 years, we're projecting that to be a 2% growth and maybe have about 1,700 elk in 2024. That would mean that we actually would provide a lot more opportunity, which is a really good thing because demand far exceeds supply for elk hunting in South Dakota. So we recommend 4 to 6% more antlerless licenses in the Black Hills. Likewise, we have more elk, so just naturally we could probably harvest more bull elk as well, and we do that with our end elk opportunity. And the proposal is to increase that by 20%, and it's more of a substantial increase, specifically because of what Andy said. Not only been exceeding our age structure objective since 2017 when we had really good age data, but we've been consistently exceeding that by more each year. You can see with the green line in the bottom right-hand figure. So really where we're at right now is 80% of our bulls are 4.5 years or older, which is a good thing because we have a lot of old, trophy bulls, but it's also a bad thing. We haven't provided as much opportunity as we could. So we'd like to, sounds counterintuitive, but reduce that age structure a bit, but ultimately what we want to do is provide a lot more opportunity. Right now, people wait on average 17 years to get an archery firearm license in the Black Hills, and that only continues to increase as we see more and more hunters applying for these licenses. So just in summary, I'll leave it on this slide off to the left. I kind of summarize that 20% NEL increase and 4 to 6% antlerless increase. I'll just put there, for context, there's about 1,500 licenses that we have in Black Hills. There's over 26,000 hunters that either apply or push the preference point every year for elk in South Dakota. Off to the right, this shows for the first time we've kind of been trying to get at the unit-specific population growth rate. So in parentheses, after each unit, you can see just the percent change that we expect. So back to that example in unit H2 and H3. We are hoping to grow the population a little bit, only 2% in H2, and H3 will decrease it a little bit. Again, maybe not as much as we want, but kind of a compromise here for making we can't give out as many analytic licenses or provide as many analytic licenses in areas more private land. And then I've also included the change. We recommend a change in type 21 license in the second row on that figure. And then the third row is the change in the annual license of type 23. I can just leave this slide up if there are any specific questions, or Andy and I have some additional advice to if people want to know more about the modeling and the other results that we have.
Andy,
any
all right, thank you. Questions from the commission?
Any questions? Thank you. I wanted to go back to the aerial survey. I'm just curious. How effective is that? Do you think you get a good count by those aerial surveys?
Mr. Chairman?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, you do. So several years back, we actually did several research projects to develop a compatibility model. And so with that, that allows us to do is estimate the percent of animals that we miss. We know we miss animals in the aerial survey, no matter what you're surveying. And so through several research projects, we're able to develop a model that estimates that proportion of animals that we miss based on certain variables like field cover, tree cover, group size. So we record all those data when we do the survey. And so the numbers that we present here is actually a model projection. It's not a bear count, a bear minimum count. So we are projecting some of those animals that we miss. But yeah, all in all, it's pretty good. I don't remember what our total excitability was, but it's about as good as you can get for elk, especially when we fly 100% of the black elk. And then again, most agencies that have to sample it in their area, because this is kind of our one main elk unit, we fly 100%. So it's a really nice data point to have for our model.
Have you ever used a drone? Have you thought of using a drone rather than a helicopter in this stuff?
Chair, I'm not going to pretend to be a drone expert, but yeah, there's definitely a lot of talk and development and work on using drones for wildlife surveys, and there's been more applicability right now to maybe some of the small game and bird surveys, but definitely there's a lot of development and discussion. I don't know if we're to the point, at least in all the discussions we've had and research that we've done, looking into drone technology. I don't think it's there right now for surveying elk. I wish it were, because that would be much nicer. But, I don't know if you have anything to add to that. But right now, I don't see that in our near future.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Bartley. This is a little bit from my own information. I'm more familiar with deer than elk. Do they have multiple birds, the female? Is that why we're seeing that female population increase
the great
rate? Not
a lot. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Bartley. So elk are not as reproductively fit, maybe, if you will, as deer. Usually the yearlings don't give birth, and usually once they give birth after that, it's usually a single.
And then secondly, in the area that on the previous map that was a gray area, and that's not a lot of elk population out in that area, in western South Dakota. I do know down around Gregory County, Charles, Mississippi County, there's a herd that kind of travels across the border and whatnot. Do you foresee those populations increasing where you may be doing something a little different for management reasons, or is that staying pretty stable?
Yeah, good question, Commissioner Bartley. You don't know a whole lot about elk hunting. We do know we have some elk down there. We've had elk down there along that Nebraska-South Dakota border for a lot of years, as I'm sure you're aware. That it's kind of a hit and miss down there, it seems to be, because we're also sharing the harvest with Nebraska, so we have some different regulations there to begin with. We do know that we keep getting additional elk, on the prairie, just exciting small herds established. We would anticipate some of those herds to grow. We're obviously introducing some antlers harvest, some bull harvest on the prairie, but just as far as gathering really good biological data to estimate what kind of growth rates we're going to see, we just don't have that. We're just so scattered and far between. Pretty tough to get to that point.
Commissioner
Strange.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner
Bartley, I'm just could if we accept this 20% increase in bull license, is that just for the year? Could that be changed, or is that going to be set for multiple years? I see that I'm just worried that if we set it for 3 years or something, that could deplete the larger bulls in the herd. And I was hoping that maybe it would only be a 1 year and we could change it if we need or whatever. What's your guys' plan?
Through the chair?
Yeah.
So it's a two-year recommendation. As Andy said, we collect a structured data every year, so we look at that every year, and we won't bring a formal presentation and recommendations next year. We definitely have those data, and can discuss that if you're interested. Based on the figure here with the continuous increase, that's probably spent about 4 weeks looking at just trying to nail down exactly how many of those we could all this in. And I would say it's pretty conservative. The 20% increase, we're not going to really notice it next year. It'll be at least 2 years before we really start noticing these ages decreasing. And then it'll also be interesting to get feedback from the public and our stakeholders to hear what they perceive as this change. Because our objective right now is 60%, and we're exceeding that. So if there's a desire to have older days, then we can be more limited with them. The block action plan as well as that objective stated at 60%.
One other question. You said earlier here that the herd in Cut State Park was trying to be held at 4 to 500 head in that area. I just wondered what has changed so much since back in the 80s. And when I hunted in the park, the bull was 52 bulls that time, 1982. What's changed so much that the herd can't be filled up with something in that category, or even half that way, half that far, instead of these few licenses? I just wonder if there's something that could be done there, or why is the reason that you want the herd to roll?
Commissioner Spring, another topic we've discussed at length, even on the ride over here, and I thought it's been an hour talking about this. Custer State Park, in this figure here, you can see the fiscal goals historically had an older age structure objective, but obviously that population, aside from chronic racing disease, we historically wanted that to be higher and just could not get it higher. There's been some research done and maybe some speculation about mountain lions, but I think likely more of a concern there of what may be limiting growth would either be mortality related to the chronic wasting disease. You know, the prevalence is probably the highest in the state as far as alcohol in Custer State Park. Alternatively, we've got densities that are 2 to 5 times as high as anywhere else in Custer State Park, even though they're lower than what they may have been. So that probably results in some sort of net export or immigration out of the park. And we saw that when we did our survey 2 years ago. Numbers that were counted in Unit 4 directly to the east were way higher than it could have been in just typical biological growth via recruitment of cats. So there's those two hypotheses that one might be out there actually immigrating out of the park, and then the other one would be that maybe it's in a slightly higher mortality rate in conservation disease. And then finally, we are relatively conservative in Custer State Park. As you can see, we put 100% at the goal harvest. It's been over 4.5 years old. And that might be another thing that providing any animal with licenses. It would be interesting to see if we provided 20 to 40 animal licenses, what that would actually do. I suspect it won't change growth as much because we might be at that higher end of the population carrying capacity.
Do you have any numbers or anything on the Cheyenne River herd at all? I mean, is this increasing a bunch? I've had calls that said they had a lot of problems over there with the numbers on their fields and whatever down there. Do you have any ideas on how much that has increased that herd down there?
Chair, Commissioner Spring. Yeah, like you were mentioning before, we don't have a lot of good biological data to go up on the prairie. I do know regional staff are involved in some of those conversations and reports on herd size, and that's the basis for the recommendations that you have in front of you. I'm trying to provide some capitalizers. But getting an exact number, just because at this point, yeah, we don't have an exact number.
Dr. Kirshen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom Kirshen, Wildlife Division Director. Just wanted to follow up on Commissioner Spring's question about the ability and opportunity to adjust licenses. We went to this concept of a two-year recommendation for these big game seasons several years ago, but with that, as part of the proposal today, one of the changes that we made as an agency is an administrative rule put a cap on a maximum number of licenses available, whether we're talking elk, deer, antelope, thus giving the flexibility to the department to bring recommended changes if and when needed to use the commission, and you can take those actions through administrative rules. So while it's a two-year recommendation, if we have some unforeseen changes or circumstances arise that's necessary to come back, whether it's because of part of the drought or fire or whatever that environmental circumstance arises, we can come back to you and say, okay, we had a two-year recommendation, but based on these circumstances for this area or these units or entire season, here's some recommended changes that we would offer up to you to take action. So it does provide us the nimbleness and flexibility to adjust the circumstances when needed, but by going by two-year recommendations, reduces the load on an annual basis of you going over all the information, all the different units and license allocations, and that process has worked well. And there have been times that we did come back between that two-year recommendation for a change because of circumstances. So our staff are very diligent in watching the numbers, the data that we obtained, and if we see something, we always have that flexibility and nimbleness to make adjustments on the fly.
Any other questions? Yes, Mr. Whitmire.
Yes, thank you. Yes, Mr. Whitmire. Looking at the numbers, you're getting the percents, you know, and then of course that's issued licenses. Pay given is also a percentage of those licenses. Do you kind of have a number with 46% bump? What does that equate to in the number of calls? I mean, it sounds like a lot, 46%, but I don't think we harvest that much of the percentage of herds, but maybe that's just a bigger take than what, you know, what it really is.
To the chair, Commissioner Whitmire, obviously that's a good question because we're discussing it right now. So 46% increase. We went from 560 to 820, so a little less than 300 licenses. We would see about 60% success around there, if you will, on average. So 60% 300 would be, you know, maybe another 150 to 200 thousand. This would be a good ballpark estimate of what we might see. You're the chair?
Yes.
And just, I didn't want to bore you guys with the details, but in the model here, we actually do account for that. So when we look at the number of licenses that are recommended or support tag allocation, I won't get into the exact details. In the spreadsheet here, and we know what that five-year average is on the antlerless licenses in that specific unit. So we can project in the population model and what we expect the change to be in the model of harvest.
Yes. With a typical winter, which I anticipate we're way low on snow compared to what normally. Would you, natural mortality, do you think too that this winter we might have a little less mortality by nature and plus more antlers that were more to melt and everything out there that is going to harvest?
To the chair, Commissioner Whitmire. One substantial mortality source in a lot of our big game populations is overwinter mortality. And severe winters contribute to that. Once you get to an adult cow elk, it takes a lot of winter to fill cow elk, and usually what you kill are those calves, right? But you're spot on as far as what we anticipate this year. It's a mild winter we had. We anticipate another good year of cow survival, and we should have another good year of recruitment out of that.
Any other questions? Mr. Dean.
When they are doing the aging on the teeth, do you just throw anything that's above 4 years in one basket, or do you divide it down by age class over 4 years? But, you know, like, our oldest bulls that were shot and gone down to a 4-year-old level. This is Derek, Mr. Dave. Yes, we do. We do look at individual ages. We get that back from Matthew's lab. Of course, for the purposes of our objective, which we're lumping them into a category of 4 years of age or older, and that's what was established as an objective. But if somebody's interested in the actual age of their elk, we do share that back with the elk hunter. We do get an email back stating this is the age of your elk, the books that contribute to each. So we do share that back with the elk hunter. And we do have a listing of all of the ages. Yeah.
So I was just wondering what the biggest age class is elk. Is it 4-year-olds that we're killing, or is it a 5-6-year-old, or 8, over and above 4?
You can get those numbers up top of your head.
Not the numbers, but through the chair. Commissioner Bees, probably the majority is going to be 4.5 or 5.5. These are the data that we looked at a lot, trying to really optimize how many bulls we could harvest to see the statistics of the trend. There was a few, I think there was a 13-year-old bull and 11-year-old bull that sneaked in there, which is unbelievable looking at compared to deer, especially in the state, you really see something older than 4.5. But yeah, I'd say 4.5, 5.5 in Custer State Park, probably we might see the majority 5.5, 6.5.
Yeah, I remember about 12 years ago, I think it was about 12 years ago when we started raising these licenses up, and I think just being in the field, I've seen the quality of animals go down. So I just kind of err on that caution. And, you know, I'm all for giving more hunter opportunity, but we also have to manage the animals for the animals, you know, and to provide that good opportunity for our hunters. But I just want to make that comment that we don't overboard it like we did about 10, 12 years ago.
Thank you, Roland. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Andy Indra, I was wondering if you had the graph that indicates, you know, historically the allocation given 12 years ago versus today, what this allocation looks like in relation to that, cows and bulls, per se. There we go. Okay, yeah, can you just walk through this a little bit, because there is a pretty good variability here in the data set. If you look back at 2004, 2022, I'll let you both explain that.
Yeah, so this is looking at our harvest all the way back to 2000. So our NEL licenses, sorry, some kind of license numbers. NEL licenses in light blue there, and our analyst licenses in red. And again, like we were talking about looking at the harvest graph, you can see back there in the mid-2000s that we really put the pressure on. We had over 2,000 analyst licenses out there. And obviously, we harvest a lot of animals. And you can see the same with any elk licenses, not to the same extreme. But yeah, we had 1,000 any elk licenses back in 2007. So you can go forward in time all the way to our what they're recommending for proposal in the box there. Those would be the respective licenses for any elk and animals to kind of give you that comparison with historical trends.
Well, not really off topic, but putting the guys on the spot, but so how does the internal competition respond? I think relating to the question of do we manage better for the larger trophies by saying, you know, you can only shoot a 4-point or more, or 4-point, yeah, 4-point or a spike. And it's
trying to grow the quality of the trophy animal. Where is that magic number? Do they get a bigger trophy at 5, 6, 7? And how will it sound to take it from?
Yeah, I mean, that
relates to this Mr. Peter's
question on numbers versus the quality.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, yeah, we've definitely had a lot of discussions about this, whether it's a deer or elk or what have you, on how to manage for some of those older age structure animals. Obviously, it's not a biological issue at this point, it's a cultural issue, and what do our public want? And I'm just going to take you back to where we're at right now, really, is with the
have any elk action. That harvest, number three, that harvest stage objective is where those discussions have led us. And that is, we're going to manage 60% of our harvest. It's going to be that 4 years of age old. Now, elk, we could debate this, and we definitely have. An elk doesn't reach its maturity at that age four. They're going to continue to grow to 6, 7, 8 years of age. So they're not at their full tilted potential. But a 4-year-old is going to have probably, that's going to be a really nice 5-point, maybe a smaller 6-point. It's going to be a trophy to a lot of hunters that never get an opportunity to hunt elk in South Dakota. So it is, it's on the edge of maximizing opportunities, but still providing trophies. We could debate that number, so we're doing the safe, and we definitely have. There's nothing magic about that. That's where we landed. And that's completely, obviously, it's prerogative of the commission, and they're looking for input on the field from the stakeholders if they disagree with that. But this went through the process of our stakeholder groups to do, and then we'll discuss it.
All right, thank you. Good explanation. Provided additional information for our listeners. Any further questions? Mr. Beach.
Yes, managing it a little bit different by the unit. You know, like your big unit in the middle of the hill is H2 and that, and that's supposed to be kind of our premier elk unit around the hill. And then like our units on the sides of that are more private, and, you know, where the more issues of elk damage come into play, where you can manage the big unit more, but like, well, one time I remember, you know, this is called the premier elk unit, more of a trophy type unit than the other unit. So just a wide brush of 20% across the whole thing.
Mr. Chair, yeah, I mean, I think all options are on the table. Again, this isn't a biological issue. We're going to grow up either way. So yeah, there's a lot of ways to do this. It would be challenging to get to some of those small units trying to manage for a certain proportion because you're dealing with small sample sizes for 1 year. You get a couple harvesters, and the next year you don't get a couple harvesters, and that changes your proportions really a lot. So you're going to see a lot of balance in those data. But yeah, I mean, I think there's things on the table as far as how we do it.
All right, good discussion. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.